the agenda.
It was the CIP which we pulled off.
And the CIP, yes.
Right, we pulled that off.
Yeah, you asked for the data, and if you get the data, then we're good to go.
Okay, I'll send you the comments, okay.
Okay, what do we have?
8A.
Hold it.
Oh.
We're waiting, oh, we're ready?
Yes.
8A, oh, okay, sorry, I didn't hear him saying anything.
No, no, it's okay.
So.
Oh, I didn't see you sitting there. Everybody's kinda hiding.
Steve's way back there now.
Are we gonna proceed?
Yes, please, sorry.
There you go. You have a copy in your binders, but I brought one for each one of them.
Wonderful.
A more.
Thank you.
What?
Get a little parched.
That one's for you, that one's for me.
Thank you.
Awesome. So, good afternoon, members of the board, members of the district. I am Jocelyn Esparzan, I am an audit manager with LSL CPAs. If you're not familiar with us, we've been contracted by the district to perform an audit of the financial statements for the 18-19 fiscal year. My role in the engagement was the audit manager, and I'm here today to present you a brief summary of the financial statements. So, a little bit of background, we began the audit with an interim phase, and in this phase, we started it in April. We came out to visit the district, we looked at internal controls, we looked at processes and procedures over disbursements, you know, cash collections and things of that nature. We had various interviews, we looked at corroborating information, and we took all of that information back to our offices in the summer, and we performed a risk assessment. And that risk assessment really kind of drives what we audit, what we look at, areas that may be a little bit higher risk. And then we come back in October, and we perform the year-end audit. This is where we perform the test of details, we confirm cash balances, insurance coverages, and things of that nature. All of that information is used to produce what you have in front of you today, and what we'll be going over. The product of which are three main audit letters that we provide to you, two of which are included in the report, and then one is issued separately. So, if you wanna flip to page 1 and 2. So this is the independent auditor's report, or what we call our opinion letter. This discusses management's responsibilities for the financial statements and our responsibilities as auditors. It talks about what an audit involves and why we believe that this audit provides sufficient audit evidence to allow us to provide an opinion to the district. And on page 2 is where we actually provide our opinion. And the opinion that we gave the district this year was an unmodified opinion, which is the highest level of assurance. And what this opinion says is that the financial statements that you see before you today are materially and properly stated in all material respects. The other item that I wanted.
Sure. Are you comfortable with questions as you go along, or would you like us to hold them till you're done?
I can open it up to the end. Some of them may require additional discussion, but it's totally up to you.
Okay.
Okay?
I'll just wait till you're done.
Okay. So the one other item that I wanted to bring to your attention on this page is the required supplementary information. Although the required supplementary information is required as part of GAAP, we only apply certain limited procedures on those, and we do not provide assurance on the required supplementary information, which includes pension-related schedules and OPEB-related schedules. The second letter that we provide at the result of at the end of the audit, which you can find on page 45 and 46, is what we call the GAS report on internal control. And in summary, any issues that arise of the audit, anything that may require a material journal entry or an issue, will be summarized in this letter. There's different levels of findings based on, some of them are based on simple dollar amounts, some involve analysis based on risk and things of that nature. The most severe finding would be considered a material weakness, and we're pleased to report that there are no material weaknesses in these financial statements. The less severe finding would be considered a significant deficiency, and in this year's audit, we did identify two. However, the district has agreed with those findings, and we've made appropriate correction journal entries in the financial statements. One surrounds capital asset reconciliation. Two entries were required to properly state capital assets. One was related to retentions payable. That was sitting as an expense, and we went ahead and included it as CIP. There was another item that was included in CIP twice incorrectly, but we have since corrected that. The second significant deficiency surrounds accrued liabilities surrounding the last payroll period in the fiscal year, which is June 30th. We made a journal entry to increase the expenses and properly accrue the liability on the district's books. The last letter that I want to bring to your attention should be included is the audit communication letter, which you can find, I believe, as an attachment, if it has been provided in the agenda.
Is that the separate letter that's dated June 6, 2020?
January 6.
Yes.
January 6.
Yes.
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 After the staff report, January 6.
Because there's two of them that are referenced in this letter that are dated the same day. And one says it's sent under separate letter. So I'm just wondering if was it sent under a separate letter? Is that maybe what we're...
The audit communication, it's addressed to the board and the director in Georgetown Divided.
Okay. Okay, that one I think we do have.
Okay, perfect. So as part of auditing standards requires to communicate with those charged with governance in the beginning stages of the audit and at the conclusion of the audit. And this letter is what we give to you at the conclusion of the audit. This discusses if there are any disagreements with management regarding any of the proposed journal entries or other disagreements in nature. We are pleased to report that there have been no disagreements with management, and we work well with each other this year. Another item on the first page discusses accounting estimates prepared by management and are based on management's knowledge and experience about past and current events. As in previous years and future years, the management's estimates of the pension liability and total OPEB liability will continue to be a significant estimate. And these are based off actuarial assumptions, including mortality rates and things of that nature.
Which we get from PERS.
Correct.
Right.
And then the down on the second page under other matters, this is where we discuss estimates again and the limited procedures that we apply towards the required supplementary information, which includes pension and OPEB. And so those three letters summarize the financial statements in a nutshell. And I welcome any questions that you may have.
Okay. Johnson, if you take a look at the letter, okay, this is January 6, 2020. This is the one that is directed to the Board of Directors, the one letter we do have. Top paragraph on the second page where you're talking about corrected and uncorrected misstatements. It does reference that you did detect the misstatements as a result of your audit procedures,
okay,
and that under separate letter, again, with the same date, do you have that letter available?
Sure. That's the letter that we reference is the GAS report on internal control.
Okay.
That one's included at the end on page 45 and 46 of your audit report.
Perfect. Okay, great. And just one more question then?
Sure.
46, okay. The... what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraph down where we're talking about management consultants and other independent accountants. If you had supporting information and help from I. Bailey, which is formerly VDT,
mm-hmm,
do you consider them a second opinion when you're doing this work?
No.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was considered that or not, but thought I'd ask. Okay, great. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
I have a question for Steve.
Sure.
But not for, oh, it's on page 7, table A4. I just wanted to, where it's administrative and hydroelectric, is that administrative cost or administrative cost for the hydroelectric?
That's, yeah, they lump administrative
with hydro.
With hydro, okay, so it's not just hydro admin, it's all admin.
That's what I was, okay, so that was like, all right.
Can I ask one question then? Steve, you probably can answer this one. On table A2, the net loss, it looks like the net loss is not in negative numbers, so I'm assuming, if I'm reading this correctly, that we actually didn't have a loss, that we actually have revenue there. Am I reading that correctly? That for fiscal year?
I'm going to let Jocelyn
answer. Sure. We're looking at A2 where it says net income parentheses loss.
Correct. Right. And I'm looking at the column, the fiscal year 2019, the $1.2 million. I take it that's not a loss, if it is what I've seen it in parentheses?
Correct.
Okay.
Good question.
And let's see, I had one more for you. Where was it? Last table, table A6. Steve, I noticed that when we have in here the gain on sale of assets, we have fiscal year 2018, we have the 875, and then for fiscal year 19, there are none. I was under the impression that if we had surplus equipment or trucks or valves, things, that we were going to be selling those, and so I expected to see something in that column. Is there a reason that we don't have anything in 2019?
I'm not sure if we sold anything. Do you recall that?
We didn't. I haven't had time to deal with it.
Yeah, I haven't sold
anything. Sell anything.
Okay. So the new trucks we're buying, are we retiring the old ones, or are we still using the old ones?
No, they're sitting up there.
Where's up there?
Up on the hill.
Oh, the boneyard. Okay.
None of them run.
Okay. Got it. And the other question I have is, same old question we all have for these CalPERS, these unfunded pension liabilities, and see how we can reduce those. But
good luck.
Yeah, I know.
It's happening to every organization.
Thank you, Jocelyn. It's a very nice report. It's very nicely laid out. It's easy to read through. It's easy to understand. So thank you for your efforts.
My pleasure.
So it looks like we've got like an A+.
One last question for Steve. With the net income between 2019 and 2018, was that one you didn't report the changes with the rate increase? Is that why it's so low?
Which one?
Which table am I?
So if you look at fiscal year 2019, net income is...
We're looking at A6
though?
A2.
Where we have the $1.2 million for 2019, but just $56,000 for 2018. Is this where we didn't put in the rate increase yet? Or is that what it was?
I would assume so, because the rate increase didn't start until January of 18, so halfway through that fiscal year. Yeah.
Okay.
So if I'm reading this correctly, then even with the loss of the $210,000 from the rate freeze, we still have $1.2 million as a net gain, because it's really not a loss. We got a certain amount.
Yeah, $1.2 million you can put towards reserves or capital reserves.
Okay, good. That's better than 56 from the previous year.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Yeah. Poll 8C.
B.
Oh, are we on B?
Yeah.
What's B? B's the generator.
I got it. Okay.
I missed that page.
So I put the staff report together for the generator. Questions on it? Happy to field those.
Were we going with the solar? Yeah.
That was the recommendation.
It's receive and file and roll.
Can we back up a sec? Because I think we skipped a step. Can I make a motion that we receive and file the audit?
Sure.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Garcia.
Aye.
Director Halpin.
Aye.
Director Souza.
Aye.
Director Saunders.
Aye.
Director Wadley.
Aye.
Sorry. Generator.
No, sorry. Adam, you're up. Generator.
You get a restart.
You get a restart.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we went through, got some bids for office generator here. Only got a couple. We did reach out to multiple contractors with not much luck. So we got two here, Sierra Nevada Electrical proposed a Generac. EMCOR Services proposed a four-year generator, both the same, 330 kilowatts, 200 amp automatic transfer switch. So we went and just did a quick analysis of, you know, usage. That's kind of one of our main things. You know, when power goes out, how long is this going to last? And cost, obviously. It kind of looks like Collier overall. You know, we'd have more operational time with that, so we kind of looked at it as a cheaper price. So, other than that, you know, it's a generator. We're going to, you know, put the pad in, lease a tank, and have the tank out there with the fuel in it for when it's needed.
Are we doing the labor on the foundation, or we have to contract that?
I think we're going to put
we're
it
gonna
in.
We're going to do it, yeah.
Yeah. In-house?
Yeah. Oh, that's the plan.
And it's propane?
Propane, correct.
So if it sits out, we don't have to worry about fuel going bad.
Yeah, or spill containment and all that stuff.
Or your hand.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the ratings, too, for customer service on the two generators, you get higher ratings from customers that own the Kohlers versus the Generacs. So were the bids roughly the same on those?
Yeah, $100.
Very close, yeah. $200
difference.
$200
difference. Yeah, one was $26,950, one was $26,425.
Yeah, so I guess line item and generator costs, you know, that includes their labor and the transfer switch and everything. So it came out. I imagine generators are pretty close, you know, I'm sure there's not a lot of, you know, just the labor goes with it.
Right. Adam, did you look into the cost for having this permitted through Illinois County?
No, so generally we don't, we wouldn't need to permit it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. And I noticed that in your cost estimates here, there's for this EMCOR Services, mm-hmm. if we end up using them with the Kohler, it says they are going to add the 800 amp transfer to allow for all power. That's an additional almost $8,000. Is there a reason why? Is that actually included in the bid, first of all?
No, it's not.
Because it doesn't look like it is according to the cost.
No.
Is there a reason why you didn't think you needed it?
Well, that would be like we wanted to run the entire, you know, shop. The whole entire time, you know, welders, like, it's a lot of power. We rarely would ever need that. So we have, you know, generators that have a generator on, you know, mobile generators. So with welders, which we could use in that case. But this will run, you know, like, just the computers and small stuff out in the shop.
Okay.
So it will run some things in the shop.
The summer, yeah, I understand it, yeah.
The 110 stuff.
Yeah.
I imagine when the power's out, we're all used to managing our loads anyway, so probably end up managing the load.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing, just one last question. The gas line with the regulator and the plumbing and the piping and the plumbing of all of that, will that be done here in-house by our staff?
Well, not the regulator.
Cost for
sorry,
that?
I'm
is
jumping
the
on
regulator
here.
And is that
it comes with the regulator. Yeah, it's all going to be a rental.
Yeah. The regulator comes with the tank.
Okay.
The pipe, obviously. We
and the pipe, they test it for you for free when they connect the tank to it.
And just last question, do you have this, by any chance, have an idea of a project schedule on this? So you guys have an idea of, I know what you'd like to have done, but you know, have you guys actually looked at your schedules to see when you might be able to squeeze it in and get it done?
Well, as far as I know, as soon as, if this is approved, then we call the guy and say, when can you do it? And then we have our part done before that. That's all there is to it. Because it won't take us long at all. All we're going to do is build a slab, I mean, out there in a couple hours. Right. Knock that out fast. Right. Small slab.
Yeah.
We'll have that done quick.
I think we should jump on this.
Yeah, I'll just make a motion.
Go ahead. We have the resolution.
Probably
you've got
a Thursday.
Got a public comment there.
Yes. Your name, please.
Karen Bartholomew. And I just wanted to know, I don't know if you know this, but Generac has something that they're advertising that if you sign up with the Generac generator, they'll give you an extended 7-year warranty for free. It's a $695 value.
Okay. Good. Good to know. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Carolyn O'Connor.
O'Connor, what was your response on Cindy's question for permitting the transfer switch?
That we would not have to.
Why not?
Is there a public utility district?
Oh, okay. Just another comment about Generac. On Facebook, people are not getting service. I mean, I've read it 3 or 4 times, so I'd go Kohler.
And I think, too, on the quotes, I think one was 10-year, one was 5-year. I think Kohler was 10-year.
Right. Yeah, I think it was better.
Yeah.
They've been around a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're noisy, though. Pick a good spot for it.
Well, we got the, it says it's the quiet one. We'll see.
Put it right next to Daryl's office, then.
Yeah. In the parking lot up front.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Your name.
I think we should vote on this.
You can plug in. You can plug in. Run a cord
today. We go ahead and accept this.
If I make the motion, we accept the resolution, which increases our operating budget by 75 from 43 to the district office back in January.
I'll second that.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Director Halpin?
Aye.
Director Souza?
Aye.
Director Saunders?
Aye.
Director Wadley?
Aye.
Thank you, Adam.
I grabbed George. I think he's next.
Got it.
George?
Yes?
Is he 8C?
What was
that? Review amendment for fiscal operating budget.
Oh, yeah, I don't need him.
Yeah.
It wasn't, he was back on the list. So.
Yeah, we pulled out anyway.
Yeah.
So we're down going to D now, aren't we?
Good luck. Yeah.
Yes.
Slides, right?
Yeah.
Slideshow.
Slideshow.
President Souza.
I saved.
Slide.
Why?
You want a blonde?
Can I confer with you for a second?
Yes, ma'am.
On.
Big one.
Let me open it. I saved the PDF. Let me open that.
For the PDF?
Where's the
pen?
Probably.
They're saying they didn't need you.
Good. Do I have the ability to influence your next article?
What did he say?
And he looked at me.
I've actually got several $100 from this pocket.
Not enough.
We'll talk later, Don.
But I don't come cheap.
Don, we'll talk later. Wait a minute. Don't I have to move these name tags around a little bit?
This one? Yeah.
Yes. No.
No, we're skipping out. I hope we have an adequate supply of water.
We've got to go to D.
Oh, we're in D. I thought we're on C.
We're on D.
Expired. It's expired, actually.
Yeah, George, we're not going to be right.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Yeah, he wasn't joking. I'm not doing it.
So
you can go home.
I waited on my own time for an extended period of time to hear that from you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks, Barbara.
Not opening.
This is, wait a minute. You're too fast for it.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yeah, look at right now. You're,
that's
gonna open like 4 times.
It.
It's gonna open 4 times now.
Okay. Where's my little button?
You can start with the lawsuit, Steve.
You want me to start with the lawsuit?
Might as well.
What am I saying, though?
But we won. It's resolved. That's one issue that's off the table.
Where's my button for the presentation?
Just a little slideshow at the bottom.
Quadra.
Yes.
They could always appeal.
It's not down here. Where is it?
The bottom right looks like
you should ask them over here.
I know. Sorry.
No,
go up here.
That's down the one at the top.
No, it's not. Oh, right here, Manny?
Of course it is.
This?
Nice try.
Try that one. There we go.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I'm in now.
8D. Are you ready?
This feels good standing up.
Yeah.
It's taking too long.
Are you ready, Dave?
Yep.
President Souza, are you ready? Okay, so I got a little copper on the rate freeze item. So this item the board needs to consider whether or not they want to freeze water rates for the upcoming calendar year. Just real quick background before you go anywhere on the slides. And for people's just general reference and remembrance, the last year about this time, I think it was actually January, took action. February adopted the resolution that froze water rates for calendar 2019. That resolution says that the rates will go up with the January-February billing cycle 2020. So, and the reason I bring that up is so the board knows, if you do nothing, the rates go up. And by the adopted increase, it was adopted back in 2017. So you don't have to do anything for them to go up. You have to take positive action to freeze them. And then, as Barbara, legal counsel, was saying, she told me to brief you all. I think you all heard already from me, at least by email, that the court did uphold our water rates. So the lawsuit was filed by Georgetown Divide Taxpayers Association and Stephen Pro Michelle Turney against the district, challenging the rates and saying that they were invalid, was rejected. So the court found in GPUD's favor. So the rates, the rate structure can stay.
It's not, no longer subject to legal challenge. It's no longer pending. Decision's been made.
Decision's made, and I sent out by email through everybody and put on the website and through the MailChimp the press release for that item. The actual full text, the 22 pages from the court, their statement of decision is posted on our website. If anybody wants to read it, they're certainly welcome to do so. I liked reading it, but because I spent a lot of time working on the rates over the last 3 years of my career. I can tell you, when I started here, I didn't think I'd spend 3 years working on rates for the district. That's what we ended up doing. So now I'll move on. That's just, I think the reason to bring it up, just so everyone knows heading into this, I think that's one of the reasons the board was hesitant to doing some of these things, and it influences your decision. So I wanted to point that out at the beginning. So, slides. There you go. So the adopted 2020 treated water rate increase. It is a 5% increase both on the fixed charge and on the usage consumption charge. So an average bill, an average I'm defining as 2,100 cubic feet per cycle. So that's 10, 11, 50 cubic feet a month. Would be $2.83 per month. $2.83 per month average bill increase. And that breakdown is $1.47 for increase in the base charge. And then if you click again, I think the things will fly in. And $1.36 per month increase in usage charge. And there's the calculation there. Okay. The adopted 2020 irrigation rate increase says irrigation water rates will increase by 10%. This means $15.40 per month per miner's inch. And then you can see how it goes.
Sorry.
You can see how it goes. From $144.20 per month to $169.60 per month per inch. And then if you try to break that out to per cubic feet, there's the calculation. It's less than a penny per cubic foot, and a cubic foot is 7.5 gallons, roughly. So that's the irrigation water increases that are proposed. And I'm going to sit down now so I can read it. Okay. So, in the staff report, it goes into some more detail in this and the history of the rates. I won't belabor that now. I'll just go through this chart here that's also in the staff report. Just compares the recommended rates versus the adopted rates. So, for everyone's recollection, back in late 17, when they went through the rate study process, the rate study consultant came up with a recommended rate structure. And so that's what's called the recommended column in this table, showing how much they recommended the rates revenue be set at. So this is revenue for rates alone. And then I've got it broken into year 1, 2, and 5. Just picked a few kind of checkpoints along the way to show what they recommended. And the board saw those rates and said, wow, Mr. Consultant, those rates are too high for our customers. We don't feel like we want to do that. So can you come up with some other ideas to help us lower the impact on our customers? And so we did that, went back through the replacement program, went back through some of the assumptions, and basically just assumed that infrastructure was going to last longer, and instead of phasing rates in over getting to that point, that kind of target point in 5 years, we spread out over 10. And so the point of this slide is to illustrate that the adopted rates were actually lower than was recommended by the rate study consultant, with the acknowledgement that that lower revenue would mean we have to make infrastructure last longer, or hope infrastructure lasts longer. So the annual shortfall there is at the bottom between what was recommended versus what was adopted, and you can see it goes from $1.1 million in the first year to $1.5 million in year 5. Okay, next slide. This, I did have some questions last time about actual revenues and adopted rates, and so I thought I'd put it in a quick table. It's also in the staff report showing by calendar years. I had to, you know, have to slice up fiscal years because the rates are calendar year and our budget is fiscal year. So I had to do some, you know, just some manipulation to get 6 months for one rate structure. And anyway, the table just shows actual, what we actually received for calendar year 18 and 19, what the 1 year rate freeze predicted for 18 and 19, and what the adopted rate structure was for 18 and 19. So you can see with the rate freeze that was adopted in 2019, your revenue is projected $3.1 million. That was in line with the adopted rates for 2018, obviously. And so the actual revenue for that first year of the new rates was $3.2 million. And then, again, the rate freeze, so the 2019 projected revenue stays the same, which is less than the adopted revenue by $2.1 million, $210,000. And then the actual revenue for 2019 looks like about $3 million. So, and then at the bottom, I just add them up so you can kind of compare that even though there is some fluctuation from 18, 19 actuals, the actual versus what was predicted by the, as well as the freeze, is roughly $6.3 million. So roughly in line with what we predicted with the rate structure. And then this chart also is from the staff report. I wanted to show the impact for the board of a multi-year freeze. Again, I got each of the calendar years that were included in the original rate study, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. And then each of the columns are the different scenarios. So the first column is the revenue from adopted rates. And you can see how it was scheduled to go up each year. And then the one-year rate freeze. And then you can see at the bottom the impact of that one-year rate freeze, $880,000. And the reason for that is even though the one-year impact is only $210,000, because you never catch up, you can't go to year two now and jump 10%. You're locked into the 5% per year because that's what was shown in the adopted rate structure. You can't get that back. So the impact is that amount you lose every year. So it compounds. So then a two-year freeze, if the board decided to do it again today, you'd be looking at a revenue loss for the 5 years of $1.5 million. I could say loss, but I guess the proper way would be less than what was adopted. So you're looking at $1.5 million less than what was adopted. And then so on and so forth. So a 3 year freeze would result in nearly $2 million, and a 4 year is $2.2 million. This is the same information in a graphical form, which is from last year at the same time I did this same chart for you all. It just shows that the impact of the first year freeze, $210,000, and then so if that carries to a second year, it's $434,000 for that year, and then a third year is $658,000 for that year, and then the red line is the cumulative. Okay. So the impacts on all this. First of all, we have to reduce our fiscal year 1920 budget because, again, the rates split. The fiscal year splits the rate year, so the rates were scheduled to go up January, February, and so our budget was put together assuming that rate increase would go into effect. And so if it doesn't go into effect, our revenue projections would be adjusted down by roughly 6 months of revenue. I'm saying $112,000. Might be a little more than that, but that's the projection. And then, so that would directly, and the easiest thing to do as a board, I think, as your general manager, I'd say, well, let's not try and find that in operating somewhere. Let's just, we have a $1.5 million budget transfer to capital reserves. We'll just reduce that. And so you'll be putting less money away for projects of that $1.5 million. And then for 2020, you're going to see a further reduction in revenue of $224,000. And so that's the near term.
Steve, can I ask you a question on this slide?
Surely.
Okay, this slide right here, really makes me want to see, if you're talking about 18-19's budget and adjusting it.
No, I'm talking about 19-20.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. I'm thinking 18-19.
Yeah, we're in
19-20. Yeah, I'm still thinking. Okay, so, but I'm thinking about 18-19, and the reason I want to see the actuals is because the previous fiscal year, when you got it to us in November, when we looked at actuals, there was $200,000 remaining that rolled over to the next fiscal year. So in 18-19, what's the residual remaining that rolled over to 19-20? Because if it's more than 112, then we can afford to freeze these rates. If it's not, we may decide not to freeze these rates. So do you know off the top of your head, at the end of the fiscal year for 18-19, how much was left over that you then rolled over into 19-20?
Well, I just want to keep, I know I've corrected you on this before, and I apologize for correcting you, because I am the GM, you're the board member, but when you say roll over, it implies something that I think confuses folks, because it implies that somehow I have that money available to spend without budgeting. And I want to make sure people are clear and the board is clear that that money isn't, like, I don't get to spend that again in 19-20. It stays in reserves and it stays in your funds. And then you can program it now through the budget process, but it's not rolling over. So I understand what you're saying. You're saying there's savings, right? So I prefer to think of it that way, is that your projected expenditures were less than revenue. So you have some excess, you have some, I mean, that I prefer that terminology. So you have excess revenue from 20 from the prior fiscal year, that, rather than saying rollover, because I think when during my training, rollover means I got money from last year, I'm just going to keep spending it, which is wrong. That's not how we want to budget. So the answer to the question is it's probably right around $100,000. I didn't have the reports to run for you all, and I'm waiting for Jocelyn left. But there's some year-end journal entries that still need to be made to true everything up with the audit.
Okay.
But I don't anticipate that to change very much. So that is the amount, I believe. Now, I will caution, again, because I understand what you're saying, that for this fiscal year, you may know as the impact, but you'd have to find that money every year. To fully mitigate the impact of a rate freeze, you'd have to find 200 and something thousand dollars every year from now until the rate structure finishes out. So you have a 5-year rate structure, you'd have to, and then you actually should be comparing, as I think about it, you should be comparing, because there's nothing to say that the budget we actually adopted last year matched the expenditures projected in the rate study. You know what I mean? So, but you guys can use the data to make whatever decisions you want. So, the revenue exceeds budget, or the budgeted expenditures, the actual expenditures are about $100,000 or so less than the budgeted expenditures. So that's the answer that you're looking for.
Okay.
So you're thinking about around $80,000 to $100,000?
What?
You're thinking anywhere from like $80,000?
I think it's around $100,000.
So $100,000. So...
You could apply that for 1 year, but it doesn't affect
correct.
Next
so,
year.
But for here and now, what we're discussing today on this agenda item, whether to freeze these rates or not, we could be then looking at an adjusted loss then of $12,000.
Your loss
for six. But let me finish.
That's not true. That's not true. You're freezing the rates is $200,000, right, for 1 year. But you're freezing it. You lose that opportunity for 3 years. So it's $600,000. That's the point of all the charts I've been showing, is to show that it's not 1 year. It affects next year, it affects 2020, it affects 2021, and it affects 2022.
Okay, so I understand, let me finish.
You go. I'm not going to interrupt anymore.
So from what I'm seeing on this slide and what I've seen in the audit and what I've seen in the calculations I've looked at that you put out in the... the budget and the revised CIP to the Finance Committee for their December meeting, it looks like to me that if we stayed on schedule with the rate hike, we would not have frozen the rates. If we look at what this district is dealing with limitations on time, project management, scheduling, and dollars, we could stay on the rate increase schedule and be so concerned about losing those dollars perpetually going forward, but our construction projects and schedules don't keep pace with that, so that we're going to eventually, at the end of the rate hike time period, have more money than the projects got done. So when I look at it in reality as to what this community is telling me, what they can afford, what we've learned from our workshops, we froze the rates for not more than 12 months, and the project schedules stayed on pace with that money. If we freeze it again for not more than 12 months, the construction schedule and projects scheduled on those production schedules stays in pace with the dollars we're collecting. And according to the audit, we're still better off by $1.2 million than we were last year at the fiscal year end of 2018. So I look at the rate, the time period of the rate increases and that time frame of the 5 years a little bit differently than you do.
That's fine. Can I go my last, I have one more slide. Can I talk my last slide before?
We'll bring it up for discussion more after.
Yeah, let me finish the presentation. I was just trying to answer questions, and I certainly appreciate Director Garcia's desire to express her opinion and views on this, which is what we're all here for, right? So you guys can talk about your opinions and views on it. I just want to get through my facts. So long-term impacts, this is what I'm saying. Additional total revenue, one year freeze. You're going to freeze this year again. Your 1 year has $658,000 impact in projected revenues, okay? So including last year's freeze, that's $1.5 million. That will delay planned capital improvement projects. This is explained in the staff report as well. My gut feeling on it, and this is something the board have to make a decision on. So you're going to tell me when it come back, I'm going to come back with a CIP next year that will not look like the one you adopted this year, because I will not have the money available to program into it. And so I will come back to you, I will go through the finance committee, and I mean, if you freeze them, I will go back to the finance committee and say, look, finance committee, we have this less revenue that I didn't plan for, and we need to talk about how low do we want to go on some of these reserve funds. How do you want to deal with some of the other reserve fund issues? And my recommendation, looking at the CIP now, is these are the two projects I would say to delay. I would say delay your two-way wildland replacements and delay the upcountry ditch rehab project. And the reason is because I would prioritize the tank recoatings, and I'm blanking it out, but there's a couple things that are the pump station replacements. Those are way overdue, and the pump station replacements, the tank recoatings, you have to keep, those things are such incredibly expensive assets, you got to keep those things maintained, or the cost to replace them can get really exorbitant. It's much cheaper just to keep recoating them. So I would say prioritize those things first, and then we can talk about other impacts. But certainly, that's just my thumbnail sketch of what to do with that reduction revenue. It's open for discussion on the finance committee and input from the board, and it's not a I have spoken thing.
Dean? Yeah, the data is clear. You can try to make whatever comment you want. Director Garcia is not a general manager of the water district. She has been telling us with the support of Director Saunders that the lawsuit that their capital rate study was not done accurately. That was proven to be false in the rate in the lawsuit and the judgment that was made. I think it's time to listen to individuals who are in this every day and know what the impact's going to be. And just from a longer term, as someone along with Director Halpin sat up at this table and dealt with the situation after boards had kicked this problem down the road for 7 years, we all know, well, maybe, and just two of us know if I can sit up here and deal with that, it's not fun. Obviously, we all know what it's like to deal with as a community. That's not fun either. And it's short-sighted. I mean, we can see the total lost revenue of what it's going to be, and we're going to kick the problem down the road to someone. Someone's going to deal with this at some point, and largely it's going to be someone having to basically do exactly what happened again a couple years back, which nobody liked. And it was horrible for this community. And then subsequently, we wasted 2 years of time, money, and energy on what turned out to be basically a frivolous lawsuit, supported by many of the people in this room, I would argue, various members of this board to basically take energy away from this community. And it's just not good business practice. I don't like doing it. I don't like raising revenue at all. I don't want to do it. But I know at the same time that our costs are going up. We know our PERS costs are going up. We know other costs are going up. And people elected me and this board to make some of these tough decisions and try to phase this in over time, and not doing some significant increase, which is basically what we had to do a couple years back. So, thank you.
I like what we have as a board, that we don't sit and talk about other board members and make accusations. I have nothing to do with that lawsuit. There was a time I made a comment about a CIP, and he talked about my intentions. This isn't how we act as a board.
It was my opinion.
Yeah. And it's a very bad opinion. And it continues. And this is very, this is not how we act as a board. This is not good governance. This is hopefully not what we are promoting in Northern California as a CSDA representative.
I'm not.
That was your opinion. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so, if I can make a comment, I'm completely in agreement with Michael there. You know, as a board, if we don't keep our relationships right, you know, healthy, and there's no that we're going to degenerate into a board that's dysfunctional. So I think it's very important, high priority to me, that those relationships, that you do not make personal accusations back and forth on any individuals, because the relationships between the five of us are essential for us to function. With that said, you know, the audit, all the tables, everything we've seen here, it's very clear that the rate increases generated an additional $1 million a year in revenue for the district. That's what it's done. You can look at it. It's clear as the bell. If you look at the CIP, whether you take the one that the lowest one is about $50 million, the highest one is over $100 million. So that means at $1 million a year, the lowest one, you're 55 years out before we address that, the CIP of, and if it's, you take the higher one, it's 100 years. So I don't think the extra $1 million a year, applying it to, and again, being very generous, the very low one, the $50 million problem we have of deferred maintenance and maintaining old equipment. We talked about this today, earlier, the need for ditches and the amounts of money. Applying $1 million a year over the next 50 years is a very, very meager effort for something. I mean, long, long before we can fix those $55 million worth of CIP projects, all of them are going to have to be replaced again. It's sort of like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. So I think that in my mind, you know, the $1 million a year of extra revenue that Cindy's pointed out that's showing up, it should be applied to capital improvement projects that we collectively agree, prioritize on. There's no, and it's a huge, big problem. Everybody in this room will be dead and gone, and so will most of your children, long before this $1 million a year will even begin to make a dent in the $50 to $100 million worth of capital improvement projects that are going to have to be done. Failure to do so is going to be, have a catastrophic impact on some future board. And so I'm, you know, I was a proponent of getting this extra million, and I would certainly think we should suck it up and continue to apply it to the capital improvement projects that are in front of us. So that would be my thought on this.
Unfortunately, we didn't get to review the capital improvement plan, and that was another important step that we should have done together with this rate freeze, because we're also handcuffed in what we have with the 5 years if we actually do everything in the 5-year CIP based on not getting the grant. So if we get the grant, then we'll still be pretty much ahead and doing fine. So this
not only does the 50 million, 100 million item is just part of the scenario, the other part is this brings up many of the things that we have to look forward to putting on in the future agendas of additional revenue source. We talked about the water tranches with PCWA. We have the hydroelectric, which is, comes to us, and we have to really consider those revenues in the future to really tie in with what we do with the rates. So it's just not, it's a full issue that we look at, and it's hard to catch up from the 15 years. The issue that we have now to look at is treated water isn't as significant as it is irrigation, so we know that next year is probably when we need to start to need the next rate study. So the issue we have now is we're at that point where how much longer do we hold it in place, and does that increase further on 2021 when we start looking at the next rate increase? Do we jump up way ahead? So those are the two balancing acts that we should think of.
Yeah, the treated water, $2.83 a month increase, I can eat it. But the irrigation rate is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. So we have to figure out somehow to maybe just freeze the irrigation rate. What if we can do that? And do the increase in treated water for $2 and something cents a month.
Well, if I can interject a thought.
Bill increase, excuse me.
If I can interject a thought. Do you remember the last month when we were all got together and we had asked the general manager to get together his revised budget and his revised CIP to the finance committee? Finance committee was supposed to look at that and get us back their recommendations. Finance committee has, you know, and this actually was a request that even started back in September. So the finance committee has not seen this work yet. It's been promised to them. We even said in December, let's allow enough time to put this on the agenda and discuss it. Let's let the general manager finish his work, get it to the finance committee, and get it to the finance committee and let them make recommendations to the board. And if that didn't happen in January, we still could have that happen as a directive to the general manager and get it back by February before the billing even took place at the end of the month. So if we still have questions or concerns about what we're really up against, it might be a good idea for us to consider sending this as a directive to the general manager to ask him to then go ahead and complete that work he should have been working on for the last 4 months. Get it done, get it to the finance committee, let them take a look at it, ask their questions, and let's let them consider the thoughts we're throwing out now, like project schedule. I mean, we can look at $650,000 over a period of time, and the fact that we may lose some of that money if we continue to freeze rates for not more than these 12 months in these chunks of time. But what does that really mean? If we get that money in, if we didn't freeze the rates, that's not likely that that would all be spent within a five-year CIP to get that much of worth of projects done anyway. And we'd still be looking at a rate increase. So why don't we let the finance committee take a look at the documents, the finance committee look at the CIP and the revised budget and bring back recommendations to us in February. Meantime, we can continue to keep looking at this too, and looking at Steve's numbers that he's provided today and looking at the slides and talking to him and getting a better understanding of what we're really up against here before we make a decision that might not be the best one we can make.
Mr. Palmer wanted to say something.
Well, yeah,
but
I mean, I'm totally confused because I brought the finance committee the revised CAP and revised budget at the last meeting. Director Saunders was there. Did I not? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Only part of it.
You're not on the board.
What was
so
there?
I brought it to them, and it's in your packet, and you decided not to talk about it today. So I understand what you're saying now is you want them to look at what I'm interpreting is you want them to look at the impact of this rate freeze. That's what I'm hearing you say now. But I want to be clear. And I want to be clear in any record that is purported to this meeting that I provided the evaluation you requested, the board directed, at the last finance committee meeting, and they provided input, and the input was, we agree with staff's recommendations, and Director Saunders was there, and he can attest to whether or not that is true. And I want to reflect that it is in your packet, and the board decided to pull it off the agenda today.
And
that's why it was on the agenda before this item. Specifically for that reason you just brought up, is that it impacts this decision.
And furthermore, on that point too, we at the last meeting we talked about having this discussion in February for that exact reason. You said no at that time that we could not do. We had to have on this meeting, so it was put on this meeting for the board's request.
Well,
so now it's a little interesting that we're trying to move it back to February when that's what we talked about mm-hmm. then, and you disagree with it. So I'm not really understanding why the change of position.
It wasn't be that folded so. Today.
I'm saying the rate freeze was slated. I argued that it should be in February as well so that we had more time. You said that was unacceptable and we had to have it on the January 9th. Now you're saying it needs to be in February.
So that we could give the Finance Committee
right.
enough time to get us recommendations back.
Right, so which is what I said back last month. And but that was not adequate for you at the
well,
time.
We still
so
don't have.
It's interesting.
Okay.
But
I have not seen recommendations from the Finance Committee.
Okay, he might have an answer.
Well, two things. What Mr. Palmer shared is correct. We did get that information in December. The second issue that I had, and I don't know if it's an issue, but maybe it's a lack of understanding. In the second slide, it showed that revenue in 18 was like $3,221,000. And revenue in 19 was, now these are calendar years, was
this one?
3,081.
The next one? No.
Keep going. It was the one that talked about the calendar year revenues.
This?
There it is. The one you just, there it is. I guess my question is.
Ah, sorry.
Oops.
Won't let me do that. Nope, I already went past it, right? Gosh darn it.
Just leave it the way it is.
Okay.
We can see it.
Okay.
The question I would have before we consider what we want to do with irrigation versus regular water is, since the rates were the same, what created the drop in revenue? Because that's just revenue. And it looks like we dropped $150,000. And if it's because half of the irrigation folks disconnected and we raise our rates again, then you're going to lose another $150,000. So in reality, you know, I think that seems to be an important thing to address before we decide which way we want to go. If we keep increasing the rates in a particular area and it creates a big loss in revenue, then maybe we need to look at a different area to increase the rates. That's all. I just wanted to make sure that I was clear that that was what that was showing, because I thought, well, what caused a $150,000 drop in revenue?
That's yeah, I'm still back now. On that the irrigation cost. Mm-hmm. It just blows me away.
Well, the first year it was 50,000 loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
first year of the increases, it was 50,000 that was lost on the irrigation income.
Yeah, I think we're up to 57, almost 60 inches lost in irrigation.
And I'm not making a recommendation on anything. I'm just saying I think we need to understand that number to help us make the right recommendation.
Mm-hmm. We might wait for the general manager to come back.
Yeah, let's wait. Dane, you have anything?
I'm sorry, were you talking?
Did you have anything?
No, sorry, I didn't hear.
I have a question I think is not related, kind of, sort of. Well, the general manager mentioned that he was working figures because the rate increases were on a calendar year, but your budget is on a fiscal year. And my question is, why aren't the rate increases tied to the fiscal year? It would make tracking easier.
I think it was timing. I think it was timing when it came up on the agenda in December. We decided to freeze them for January, so it just happened to start at the month that was the beginning of a calendar year.
But originally, the rates were increased in January.
Yeah, they're always increased in January.
Always, really?
Well, they're always dealt with in January. You don't deal with the cost of irrigation water in the middle of the irrigation season. You've got to figure out your rates at the beginning of the year, and you've got to run your money on a fiscal. Yeah. You can throw the water year in there too to really confuse you.
Steve, did you have something else to say? Or
I think you need to say it.
No.
Ask the question that was posed.
What?
I think I answered.
There's a question
by the Finance Committee.
I'm not a challenge or anything, but
no,
I looked at the revenues actual for 18 and then 19.
Yes.
And the revenues, even though the rates were frozen, the revenues went down by, call it $150,000. Do we know why?
They went down, from 18 to 19, yes. No, I don't know why. Obviously, it's because of lower consumption, right? I mean, these are water rates, so it's lower consumption. As to why there's lower consumption, I don't know. The weather is an influence. I haven't evaluated what could have caused it. But, well, I mean, the only reason I
raised the question was if we're going to decide how we want to move forward with rates, and we better figure out what the public is saving on so that we don't end up forcing them to try and save another $150,000.
Right.
The assumption is it's irrigation water.
Even though irrigation used less, the rates made it, we got more revenue from it. So.
Well, yeah, and the irrigation revenue, I mean, it's like the estimate the rates is like $460,000 and it came out at like $410,000. And I'm not sure if that is in here anywhere, that comparison, but I think it is important to watch those revenues and see where they're going. Now, I would caution anybody to draw a conclusion from two data points. So it's something to be aware of. And the rate study recognized this, and there are some factors in there, consumption factors, that say the first year your revenue is going to be less, and then it's going to come back. And that really didn't happen that first year, as you can see. But it's happening the second year, apparently. I mean, it seems to me that it is.
There's also a weather factor.
There's definitely a weather factor, and that's a big part. And, if you wanted to try and educate yourselves more on it, you know, under Daryl's Operation Manager Creeks' OM, Operation Manager report that he gives every month, he has the water production data in there. You could kind of compare to see if you can draw some conclusions from it. I mean, I do believe, but that won't tell you whether. We just don't track precipitation like that. And temperatures, I mean, that'd be a pretty robust analysis.
We're going to have to in the future, because the reason we don't have to do it, as opposed to some other agencies, is they also have to worry about stormwater with their reservoirs that they have to release downstream, so they really have to know ahead of time so they don't have that Oroville issue where you're just releasing a whole bunch of water and then you can't catch up and then you're affecting your spillway. So, I mean, there are studies that can kind of predict, and that's another thing down the line, stormwater capture, is what does that look like for us? How could that help with irrigation? That's one way we can put it towards irrigation and also help reduce the cost. But as I started with not looking at the CIP in conjunction with this, that was one of the problems we had. And this is probably a good thing that we should direct when we're putting it back to the finance committee to look at CIP budget and give us the recommendation for the rate freeze coming back so we have more data inputs given to us.
Steve, did the information that you provided to the finance committee...
I wasn't sure. We're both in a line. Steve, next time sit over there.